Welcome to the Three Haunted Podcast, where we bring you all things horror, supernatural, folklore, mythology, and all things that go bump in the night.
What's up, everybody? This is your co-host, Ashley Lunar Goddess, Gorilla Girl filmmaker and horror-loving cinephile. I'm just your average podcast-producing badass.
I'm John Thomas. Some would say that I go a little too far with my love of all things horror, paranormal, and meta, but I say, talk nerdy to me, and I'm all yours.
I'm BJ Segura, an aspiring paranormal musician who plays live for the dead because the living just doesn't want to hear me.
The Dead of Winter Horror Network and Nick Kane from the 508 Productions invite you to endure the most terrifying immersive experience in all of podcasting. Beneath the Red Umbrella, now available wherever you listen to podcasts. Beneath the Red Umbrella, when the snow falls, the killing season begins.
What's up, ghouls, gals, and all of our spooky pals out there? In today's episode, we'll be discussing everything paranormal with special guest J.D. Hill. Jay is a psychic medium, paranormal investigator, and host of podcasts The Cemetery Files and Paranormal Triangle. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, glad we were able to schedule it to get you on. I know our schedules have been a little mismatched, so when you said, hey, I can actually do Wednesdays, I was like, yes!
Yeah, Wednesdays work good for me, Thursdays now. So I work in a country club as a grill chef, so we're getting in the off season.
So you have two podcasts, or actually you have more than that, but the two I know of are The Cemetery Files and Paranormal Triangle. Can you tell us what those are about?
I have The Cemetery Files is with another host, a good friend of mine, Kelly Schaefer, and she's with K2 Paranormal down in Tennessee. So, that show actually kind of just, it was on my brain one day. I wanted to make a new podcast and I saw her picture and something kept telling me, she kept coming up on my feed, you know, this, and I was like, I think I need to talk to her. So I did. And yeah, we became fast friends and we have a lot of, similarities in the paranormal, and she's a researcher and she's also a witch. So, but she does really, really good with research and investigations and all that. So we've had quite a few shows. We started doing telephone shows where it's just me and her talking on the phone, just because sometimes our ideas would kind of pop out of that conversation. So I have a bunch of those Cemetery File shows on anywhere you can get your podcasts audio. I also have some video on YouTube. It's under my Studio 6 Media Productions page. And because of the fact that I created that a long time ago, because of the fact that I have other podcasts, the Paranormal Triangle with myself, Kelly Schaefer from the Cemetery Files, and my friend Dave Taylor from Our Haunted Lives on Paraflix. We banter back and forth and we, you know, talk about a lot of different things, and it's a fun show and we laugh a lot, and I'm usually the one that's picked on a lot, so I'm used to it. But I also have another show called Beyond the Reaper, which is a podcast about, I basically have people who talk about near-death experiences. I don't interview them per se, but I just have them on the show and they tell me their story and then I upload it. I've had a couple so far. I kind of got away from that because my brain's always working and I all of a sudden decided that I wanted to do another podcast. And so I came up with Studio 6 Paranormal Memoirs, which basically are the stories of, it's basically the stories of my life dealing with the paranormal and all my experiences throughout the years. I really enjoy that. I enjoy telling stories. I enjoy, you know, this is my, instead of writing a book, I do this. You know what I mean? I'll tell my stories and tell my life story basically on, you know, on a podcast, and they're all audio. I haven't done any videos yet. I usually just record my audio and then I edit it and this and that. So, but I really enjoy doing the paranormal memoirs because I've got a lot of good stories. And one of the reasons why I like to do that is when my daughter was young years ago, because she's 31 now, she told me something. She says, "You tell the greatest stories and I'm always so interested in listening to you because, you know, you've got awesome stories." So I kind of took that. I don't know what made me think of that, but I thought about that when I was thinking about a new show, and all of a sudden I remember her saying that, and I do enjoy telling stories, and I've got quite a few. So yeah. So that's kind of what I'm doing. I just came back from Tombstone, Arizona. I'm working on my first Paradoc documentary. I got some good shots. I got some good video. I was only there for like 4 days because, you know, I can't afford to stay there any longer than I did. It was expensive. But yeah, I am working on a series of documentaries. I've got a 3-part series for the Old West, it's called the Pioneer Bloodshed, and it's an Old West history tour and paranormal tour. I've got 3 shows for that, and then I've got 2 shows for Gettysburg that I'm going to do, and then I think I've got 3 shows for the gangsters in the 1920s and 30s for Chicago, which I live right now in Wisconsin, so I'm only an hour north of Chicago.
That's really cool.
So I'm busy, but these things cost money. And so, yeah, I have a campaign up on Indiegogo to raise money for this, because this is what I'd rather do than sit on my hands and do nothing.
So did you, I guess my question is, I want to get into some of these stories if possible. Mm-hmm. Do you have any recent ones that really stuck out, maybe in Arizona or?
So I'll tell you a little story here, a side note. I've always had this, because I'm a psychic medium and I have visions periodically. When my gifts were really coming through a couple of years ago, I was working at a place. It was like a warehouse. And during the day, at this one particular spot of this warehouse, I would have a vision of myself walking through a saloon. It was constant. I mean, every day I would be in that spot, I'd have that vision, and I'm like, what is up with this? So I would basically, I talked to another person. Well, she was my mentor. I talked to her and she said, yeah, she says, you have a long, you know, a big connection with the Wild West, with the Old West. And I said, really? I said, I love the Wild West, the Old West. I love all of the, everything about it. And she said, yeah, she says, you had some type of past life there. You were known. And I was like, okay. And so fast forward a little bit, I was thinking about Tombstone and I was thinking about the OK Corral and this and that. And that, I put it on my bucket list and I wanted to be able to go there eventually. This was a couple years ago and I wanted to go there eventually. And I had this kind of connection with this, and there's other towns in the West that would be familiar to me. So one of the persons that I'm a fan of, and I always have been, is Doc Holliday. You know, they made great movies about him and the OK Corral and all that stuff. And I just thought, you know, that was pretty cool. But there was one time I was trying to think of what his name was, his real name, which was John. But I was really intently thinking of it, not knowingly that what I was doing was kind of basically tapping into his energy. So that night I went to sleep and didn't really think anything of it. And usually I get a lot of my visions and a lot of my stuff before I go into REM sleep. And all of a sudden I had this face, which was his, like zoom right to my face. And it scared the shit out of me. And basically he said, you know, what do you want? You know, I must have connected somehow with him because I know that he is one of the few gunslingers and gamblers of the Old West that has not crossed over. I basically just said, I was just thinking about you, dude. Sorry. You know, I'm a big fan of yours and da, 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 da. Well, come probably sometime later, you know, I had basically said, I would like to do some type of a documentary on his life or, you know, by his grave. And if I could go to his grave and basically try to interview him, you know, in a sense, and try to get some EVPs and try to get something on tape or, you know, use a spirit box or something like that, you know. And, but I was like thinking about it. I'm like, man, I'm like, that's expensive. I know where he's buried and that's just, that's crazy. And then I hear this voice out of nowhere say, why don't you take one of those flying things? And so I knew where that came from and I knew who it was. And I'm like, yeah, I ain't got money for that either. You know? So when I went to, so fast forward, I was going to Tombstone. I basically said, I would appreciate it if you could be there. And lo and behold, when I got to Tombstone, I went into Big Nose Kate's bar right there. And it has pictures of Doc Holliday and all this other stuff and the history. And the building itself had basically burnt down years ago, but there was still parts of it that were still left. And part of the bar was still there from the original building and this and that. I could feel somebody sitting next to me when I was there and I was eating dinner and this and that. And that was about the only, me and another person were at, in this place. And so, but I could feel the energy and it was really pretty cool. And of course, for tourism sites, I mean, the ladies there were basically kind of, you know, scantily clothed to be honest. And I heard this, you know, like, holy crap, you know, or holy shit. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of the way it is, you know, and it was really kind of funny. I could hear him talking and he was basically very critical of the building and of the pictures that were on the wall and, you know, the different things around Tombstone and talking about the OK Corral and everything. And he's basically saying they don't really know how it went. They only got secondhand stories. And so when I was done and I, you know, when I connect with a spirit or connect with somebody who's trying to talk to me from the other side, you know, it's basically sitting next to somebody and listening, not intently listening, but you're kind of, your friends kind of, you know, flapping their gums and just talking and you're just getting bits and pieces. That's kind of the, what it was because I wasn't totally in tuned because I was eating my dinner, you know, and when I walked home or walked back to the cabin I was staying at, he was, I could hear footsteps, literally hear footsteps. He was walking, first he was walking behind me, then he was walking in the street on the side where it was all gravel, you know, and I had to stop and I'm like, and then the footsteps would stop. And then I would walk again and hear the footsteps again. And I'm like, okay. And I knew who it was, but that was one of my experiences there. It was pretty cool. But it's really, really commercialized, you know. Even going to the Boot Hill Cemetery, that was pretty cool, but it was really commercialized. I mean, it was just, it kind of like lost its luster, you know what I mean? So.
Now, you mentioned when you connect to spirits, it, you know, you experience it a specific way. When did you first realize that you could connect to spirits?
That I actually acknowledged it was probably, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. I always knew that there was something there. And I, like I said, with my paranormal memoir show, I have got, you know, I'm three stories in about when I was in my 20s and another story and this and that. But yeah, I always knew that it wasn't so much the fact that I was into the paranormal. It was more or less that the paranormal was into me. And yeah, so that's the best way to describe it, because even when I wasn't looking, it was always there.
Do you think that there was a reason for that, like almost like a, I don't know if it's a calling or just
I was born with it.
Yeah, but I feel like when things happen in your life, maybe, or like, I feel like we've interviewed a lot of people and the running theme is that, you know, your gifts are revealed to you when you're ready for them, but also for some of them for reasons, right? Have you ever felt like that?
Yeah. I didn't realize that my gifts were from my father's side until later. Like I said, I had experienced a lot of different things when I was growing up, and I felt different. You know, I felt I wasn't like everybody else, and my mind was always racing and always like, you know, going. And in one of my shows, I discussed this when I was, you know, younger, when I was in like under 10, there were times where the energy would kind of come over me and I would kind of be solace, and I would hear voices in my head, you know, and it would sound like standing in a room with a bunch of people at a dinner party that were all talking, but you're wearing earplugs. You could only hear the muffling. You can hear the conversation, but you can't make it out. But it was almost like a, like say 50 people in a room talking amongst themselves at like a dinner party, you know, and I would get that, and I would kind of feel beside myself, and I'd never understood what that was, but it was really weird. And I would experience that once I got past puberty, they kind of stopped, you know what I mean? And then after that, every once in a while, I still get that every once in a blue moon, but it wasn't until I had, and when I was 42, so I'm 53 now, so when I was 42, I had a stroke. It was because of drinking. And basically, my brain decided to take different pathways, and which kind of helped open up some different things. And then once I really got better, that's when my gifts were kind of like somebody opening a Pandora's box and saying, here you go. You know, so that's when I realized I needed to find a mentor, and I needed to find out what was all going on in my life and this and that. So
was it hard finding a mentor?
Nope. I found her within a matter of an hour after I thought of it.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And she actually, she's on Facebook. Her name's Shauna Maria, and she lives in Minnesota. And I basically sent her an email, told her who I was. She called me on the phone about the next day. So when I talked to her, within probably, you know, 10 minutes of the conversation, she was saying that, you know, I could put you in some of my classes, and, you know, you could sit with other people, and, you know, we could, you know, do these practicing all this other stuff. And she was explaining, you know, how much she charges. And then I talked to her about another 15 more minutes. And then she said, you know what? I'm going to stop. I'm not going to have you do that. I want to work with you one-on-one, because if I put you in a class, you're going to be bored. Said, you're far more advanced than I realized after talking to you. And I said, okay. So I did for 6 months. I worked with her one-on-one. I would talk to her on the phone, and we'd do voice or video chats and exercises and meditations and stuff like that. And she's been a really good friend of mine, and, you know, I owe a lot to her. So, but yeah, so that was probably 5 years ago.
Did a lot of that come about because, like you said, that it started manifesting in your dreams, right? Like, or in your, just before the REM sleep, is that kind of where it started? And then it just kind of, cause that's one thing that we've definitely shared, is that the dream world, right? Like a lot of my gifts of, that's kind of where I'm able to connect with spirit and all that. Mm-hmm. But I haven't been able to go further than that. Was it easy to make that transition, or was it just...
It was natural for me. I mean, it wasn't something that I had to really work for. I'm a lazy medium. I really am. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm lazy as they come when it comes to that. I know I don't meditate like I should, but I do. But I know that I would be able to kind of hone a little bit better or control a little bit more of my gifts if I did meditate more and focus a little bit more on the positive side. But because of the fact that It's when I was growing up, I didn't have any patience for anything. And I really still don't, you know? So if you can relate to, you know, sitting down and meditating for 5 minutes, even that's kind of sometimes excruciating, you know, it's like, cause you can't get in that frame of mind and you can't, some can, and some it comes natural. With me, I'm like, I ain't got time for this, you know? And so, I mean, that's just, you know, the way I look at it. But, no, it started, like I said, probably after my stroke, and really just kind of things just kind of started happening. And then I was basically every night, and I would close my eyes and I would have another set of eyes looking back at me. Don't know who it was, don't know what it was. But they were probably 2 inches from my face. I could see their eyes. I could see it, you know, clear as day. I still get that. I think I had that today when I, you know, I was resting with the cat and I closed my eyes and had a male's face in front of me. I don't exactly know who or what, but if there's a message there, you know what I mean? If I pressed the issue, you know what I mean? I always have people looking at me. I always have people that are, you know, follow me, you know what I mean? That I don't pay attention to because of the fact that I choose not to, because of the fact that I am busy doing other stuff. You know, I'm not always in that. I'm in that medium mode, but I'm not, you know what I mean? It's kind of like having a door open a crack so somebody can kind of, you know, hear me and come in, but I don't have it wide open and have the sign says, please come in. You know what I mean? I don't, you know what I mean? Because I've been accosted before where I've had my gifts, like my doors, like wide open. And I went to a location once where I used to do one of my podcasts in a haunted location. And this lady that was part of the building, for some reason, she never came on the property because the guy that was we called him the Hat Man in this building, actually took her life, strangled her. And this was from way back in probably the 30s, 20s. And she would stand across the street. And when I would park my car and I would be wanting to go in there, she would accost me all the time. She'd be yapping in my ear constantly to the point where Spirit, which is where one of my guardians, would intervene and say and push her back and say, he's not, it's almost like he's not taking clients now. Okay. You know? But eventually I enlisted my mentor and she saw the same thing I did. And she saw exactly what I did about how she died and this and that. The gentleman there that is still there, he doesn't like me that much. I respect him because of the fact that he's in that building and that's fine. And I've told him before that, you know, whatever you did when you were alive, that's your business. You know what I mean? You're dead. So it doesn't matter to me. You know what I mean? That's your choice. It's your choice to be here, your choice, whatever. And so it was kind of like it's kind of like when I would do my podcast, it was kind of like working with an employee that, or a coworker that just kind of put up with you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I work with this guy. I don't really like him, but he's a coworker. So you know what I mean? That's just kind of the vibe I got. I did a podcast once with, Our Haunted Lives, and that's on Paraflex actually. And he was in the room and I knew he was there, but I don't know why, but he was in the room and I was in the upstairs, one of the old bedrooms, and I'm doing this interview and there's Dave Taylor and Christy was there and the other host, and she was talking up a storm. Well, the spirit that was next to me did not like that because he didn't think that at that time, women shouldn't be so outspoken. And so he was physically manipulating through the internet, through the computer, making her ill. And she didn't know why. She says, I feel like I'm going to get sick. I said, yeah, that's the guy probably standing next to me. And she's gifted. And she said, you need to tell him to stop. And I said, okay. And I did. But as the interview went on and it ended, I had out my recorder. I stopped the show, you know, it was over, and I was sitting on my, and I said, what the F was that? why did you do that? And then I played it back and it was this, and I couldn't understand a word he was saying, but it was something probably too not so nice. And I understood that he just didn't like women. And I was like, okay, don't do that again, please. You know? So, yeah. So I've had different experiences in different places. So when I get, if I ever go to this place, he knows I'm there. Like I was sitting there talking to the owner one time last year or something like that about Halloween or something like that. And I had seen him in my mind's eye walk around the corner. And the first thing out of his mouth was, what the hell are you doing here? And I was like, I just ignored him. But I have that, you know, I can acknowledge it. I experience it. That's been basically my whole life, you know.
Being that you've experienced the paranormal in some form your entire life, were you ever afraid of it, or was it always just kind of normalized for you because you grew up with it?
I guess in a sense, I was afraid of it, but I was more into the mystery of it. You know what I mean? So that kind of took the sting out of it, or the fear out of it, I should say. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, this is really cool. I mean, I grew up when I was a kid. I'm a 70s kid. I grew up watching Scooby-Doo, you know, and thought that that was the coolest thing ever. And that I wanted to be just like those guys. You know what I mean? And always, you know, wanting to on Halloween, wanting to go to, you know, haunt, makeshift haunted houses and stuff that my parents would never take me to. But knowing that when I was growing up and I was probably 13, we lived in Missouri and there was an old house, a mansion that was right underneath in this small town under this bridge. And that was, they were, you know, they would have like a makeshift haunted house there every Halloween and this and that. But I would drive I would go with my parents or my sister or whatever, and we would drive by that house. I would always feel something was there, not knowing or not realizing when I was, you know, 13 or whatever years old, you know, I wasn't, but I kind of felt weird in that sense. And I'm like, that place is spooky. I would really like to go there. What 13-year-old says that, you know? I mean, this place was creepy, you know, had a big stone wall around it. And yeah, it was just, you know, I grew up thinking that Michael Jackson video Thriller was really cool because of the fact that it was scary, you know? And yeah, so it's just things like that. Halloween has always been my favorite holiday.
I would say, I mean, I love going to all the haunted places around wherever I have the chance to go. Like, I've gone to some cool places in Scotland recently, and I just love to go to all these places. The one place that I have a reservation, and Ashley has this reservation too, is like going to like asylums, right? Like not the funnest place to maybe do an investigation. Right. How do you feel about going to those types of places?
sensory overload. I could go. I've been invited to go, but I never have. It's because the fact that spirits, you know, see my light and they see the inner workings of me, so to speak, you know, I'm kind of open, you know what I mean? So they kind of see me for what I am. I don't try to hide anything spiritually. But being in like an asylum, the first thing I would have to say is, what would be the benefit of me being in an asylum? What my purpose and what my intention would be? Because if I'm there for the jump scares or something like that, I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, I've always wanted to go to an old hospital or whatever, because I know that there's spirits there that have patients that have died that have never left that could use my help. You know what I mean? To cross over or whatnot. So being in a place like an insane asylum, what people don't understand is the emotion and the energy and the frequencies that flowed freely around there from people who were mentally ill, it creates what's called a stagnant charge. It's kind of like, you know, you're watching a movie and then all you see like a power surge and you got sparks coming out of boxes and this and that, like on a movie, you know what I mean? And what I mean by like the like stagnant charge like that is just like, it's an overload. It has nowhere to go. You know what I mean? And so it kind of bursts at the seams, and there's pockets of it everywhere, especially in asylums, because of the fact that the people who have had mental illness, or, you know, for whatever reason they were there, if they were sick or whatever, it can create that stagnant charge. You know what I mean? And it has a tendency to burst and has a tendency to create a different element of energy or frequency. And I've ran into a couple of those different places. I've ran into them, and it's almost like somebody taking a sparkler and lighting it and just putting it in the ground, and it's lighting, you know what I mean? It's there and it's bright, and it's, you don't want to touch it because it's really hot. So, you know, you kind of stay away from it. That's kind of like that, you know what I mean? So when I hear people of going through different things of like asylums, and they say, oh, we got this and we got that, you know, and it's just really, you know, we were really scared, and, you know, and we heard some really, you know, scary things. A lot of that stuff that people hear that scare the crap out of them, or they say it's like demonic or it's something like that. What people don't realize is that it's not so much that it's demonic. It's the fact that whatever that energy was there at one time, and whatever frequency was at that level at one time, created this pocket of this negative energy. Okay. And it can happen. It can like burst open at any time. You know, you can just, whatever, if your frequency trips it, it's like a tripwire, you know? So there's different things out there. I mean, I would still say that there are a lot of different mental ill people that either haven't crossed over or, are just there. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird because of the fact that they're still stuck in their mind, or if they're still experiencing some of that. And what a lot of people don't understand is that, yeah, even after we die, you know, we still have free will and free choice to do what we want to do until we decide to cross over into the light. Then that's when that stops. But other than that, I mean, there's people there that have died that were mentally ill, and they may be, some may still may be in that state, you know? So you run into different things, and people say, oh, it's a demon, or it's just that. The percentage amount of people who say that they've experienced a demon is like very, very low. If you actually experienced one, you would probably shit yourself. I'm just being honest. I'm serious. You would. I've had that experience. I know what that feels like. And that's on my first episode of Paranormal Memoirs. And I tell the story of after I gave my life to Christ, guess who came trying to intimidate me? Because I was going down a wrong path, and I was headed for not so great pastures. And when I did a 180 and saw the truth and realized what I was doing and started changing my life when I was, you know, 22, somebody paid me a visit, and it wasn't a nice visit, let me tell you.
The Girl Scouts, they always try to sell you those cookies.
Right?
I'm just kidding. Yes, I love what you said about being mindful. Before you go to a location, you ask yourself, what is my purpose? What is my intention? I think that's phenomenal, because I think that's also going to adjust your vibration and your energy before you go in to a space that is a little less volatile. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And I've also told people too, you know, I also work with other paranormal teams as a medium, that I do virtual walkthroughs or physical walkthroughs, depending on how close they are. I try to give instructions. I'm also the quote manager of what we call the Sims of K2 Paranormal, spiritual, intuitive, and mediums. And I kind of guide them, because we have quite a bit on the team. And so I try to, if they have a question, they send it a question to me, and I try to help them, kind of like mentoring them. And, you know, somebody, especially with somebody that's just starting out their gifts or whatever. But I've always told people, especially if you work with me in any type of capacity, when you're going to a haunted location, that's, you have to, what I told you, you have to, why am I here? What am I doing here? What are my intentions? And then once you realize that, you have that in your mind, and that you're saying that this is what I'm doing. And then right before you go into a location, you always kneel down before the location, because you're asking for permission, and you're also giving thanks for being there at that time. And that's when some spirits might be more apt to want to talk to you, because they know that you're not coming in there to be a jackass.
Yeah, I've actually heard that from a few people, that you know, you go in, you ask for permission, you say that you're here with light and love, and you're not, you know, here to antagonize and all of that. And I think that's amazing. And that's what, like, I do whenever I try to go into places and all of that. One thing I had it just struck me with when you talked about the mental illness, spirits. My biggest question is, like, if you are mentally ill and you're living, you know, in the 3D world, and then you die and you don't cross over, are you still stuck with that illness? Does it go away? Or, because I know, like if you cross over, then you're not in your head anymore, right?
Right. You're not. All that stuff is shedded. You know what I mean?
Right.
You get to your genuine spiritual self. I mean, whatever,
right,
whatever God has planned for you, whatever, if you've got to go back to school, or if you've got to go over here, you know what I mean? It's just like all that. But that's always been a different question for me, is I always ask myself, or I ask spirit, that is, you know, do some of these mentally ill people still have that? You know, are they, and it depends on the person. Depends on their lives, depends on what life they're on, depends on how many times they've come back, depends on how many, you know, basically what they signed up for. What does their soul contract say? You know, is it something that they signed? They said, when I die, I don't want to know. I don't want to not experience what I was experiencing. You know, I want to be able, if I was sick, I want to be able to still be sick. I want to, you know, because that's part of learning. This is the hardest planet to learn anything on.
Yeah.
Easy, hands down. So when you have your soul contract, that you pick everything. It's like going into a grocery store and saying, I want some lima beans, I want some barbecue sauce, I want some of this, I want some of that. You have all that. So this is part of your learning and part of your growing to ascend into a higher realm. You know what I mean? So it depends on the person. I can't say that every one of them, every people with mental illness does that. I don't know for sure, but what I've experienced, or what I've come across, is the majority of the time that person's, if they haven't crossed in the light, they're still going to experience that. You know what I mean? There's some people that have crossed over and come back, you know what I mean? And then all that still is just, you know, for kind of like hanging around a loved one, kind of giving them, you know, guidance or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different set of rules that they have to adhere by. You know, they can't interact like, you know, like you're teaching a class. They can't do that. There's only certain things that spirits who cross and come back can do. When you haven't crossed, do whatever you want, pretty much. You know what I mean? But that just prevents you from getting farther into your session, you know what I mean, and growing. So there's still a lot of spirits out there that choose not to cross, just because of the fact that they're, the biggest thing I get from these spirits that don't want to cross is retribution. They're afraid of being judged. They're afraid of what's beyond the light, because they don't know, because that's, you know, but not every spirit goes through that. When certain spirits, they die and then they see the tunnel and they cross right away. They didn't want to have that option to stick around. They just automatically, you know, it depends. There is not nobody's life is the same. You know what I mean? So, and that goes the same with spirits.
Do you think that some spirits, some ghosts, hauntings are part of the soul contract? Like they're there to teach people that are still, you know, of the corporeal world, lessons.
Yep. If that's what they signed up for. Yep. If that's basically what they wanted to do and saying, I'm going to stick around, like case in point, my main guide is my grandmother. Other guide that is not really a guide, but she is my mother. And she sits in the back and she disappears every once in a while. But there are certain times where she's just kind of, you know, watching over me. I went to see my grandmother because she's buried right next to my mother. And it was when I was just kind of starting to get into my gifts, and I went into the cemetery and I wanted to have a conversation with my mother and my grandmother and my grandfather and da, da, da. And I wanted to know what was happening with me. Why am I experiencing more of this, these different things? And I went home that night and I went to sleep. Now, I don't remember if it was a dream or if I woke up, but I think I woke up because when I opened my eyes, my grandmother was standing 5 feet hovering off the floor wearing her black dress that she was buried in, evidently looking at me like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? And the only way I knew that that was real to a certain degree was there was a light behind the TV at the end of the bed. It was a greenish white light that kind of illuminated her so that I could see her. And the only thing I could muster out of that was, oh shit. And that's all I said. And then I went back to sleep. Ever since then, you know, I knew that something, at first I didn't realize who it was because I've never seen my grandmother. My grandmother died when I was 3 months old, but she got to hold me on her deathbed. I never seen her, never saw a picture of her, never, but yeah. So later on, a friend of mine who's another medium and said, do you know the name of your spirit guide? And I said, no. She's like, you should. And she said, starts with a G. And I said, She says, Gladys, ring a bell. And that's my grandmother. That's my mom's mom. And I'm like, oh, that's what that was. You know, it's kind of an aha moment, you know.
That's got to you feel good too, right? Like just
it does, but it's kind of like my grandmother Gladys. See, I have this envisioned in my head of a farmhouse, and my grandmother is standing at the counter by the sink reading a magazine, and my mother is at the other end of the kitchen, right by the back door. Sitting on a wooden chair, and I don't always interact with them, but there's another doorway that has kind of like a shield, like a force field type thing, that there's a like a waiting area right underneath the stairs that spirits can come and go, and if they need my help with something, you know, they stand at that doorway before the kitchen. And then I have a big like wooden picnic table type thing that's got two other guides that I have that sit at the table that are Native American. And sometimes I'll sit at that table and sometimes I won't. You know, that's the way I have to envision that to make it work for me. You know what I mean? So, and to make it, if it makes me feel good, I mean, yeah, I know that I'm surrounded, but it's just, it's kind of an invasion of privacy. You know, I mean, I don't always like my family kind of hovering over me, but I get it. But
that's funny.
You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, yeah, you know, but yeah, it's just kind of different.
But do you know how you first connected? Like, so when you connect with your spirit guides, or like, was there a tool or something that helped you really hone in on them, who they are? Because I've been struggling myself with who mine are, and I'm not sure how to connect with them.
You just gotta ask.
I mean, It's not as clear to me.
No, it seems weird. Don't get me wrong. It's different for everybody. Okay. I mean, so, and I will say this, and I stand by this 110%. Mediums know mediums, and there is not one medium or gifted person that is the same. We are all different. We all have different makeup, different gifts. We might have similar gifts, but there's something that you can do that I don't do. You know what I mean? Or vice versa. You know what I mean? Everybody has something with inside themselves that they do that nobody else can do. Or they may do a similar version of that, but you do it your way. You know what I mean? So that's the one thing you have to realize too, that not every medium are made the same. That would be pretty boring, actually. But I will tell you that when I asked, I was trying to figure out when I had, if you've got a vision of somebody, if you get visions and you see somebody sitting there, you see this person in your mind a lot, then there's something to that. And you just need to ask your guides, what or who do I keep seeing? You know what I mean? What's the name of this person that I keep seeing? When I was laying in bed one time and I was trying to figure out, I kept seeing this Native American and I was like, why am I seeing this? Well, I asked spirit. And I asked this spirit, I'm like, okay, who are you? Or, you know, where is this, you know, what's the name of this? Or where am I getting my information from? That's what I asked. And I can't remember. It was a long time ago, but I can't remember exactly what that the spirit said. But it was Lakota. And it was another word for God. And I'm like, because I had to look it up on my phone. You know, I'm looking, I'm like, what is this Lakota word? And that's what came through. And I looked it up and it was like a form of God, you know, a deity. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, then I come to find out who my Native American guide was. And it said Standing Bear. Well, Standing Bear is a known figure in the political world back in the day. It's funny because there's a certain political tie to me and my name. And it took me a while to figure that out years ago, that I'm the descendant of William Henry Hill, who was good friends with John Adams and knew President Washington. And he was one of the first district attorneys of North Carolina. He was the first one appointed by George Washington. And I was like, oh, so it all ties in. So part of your, you know, researching your gifts of who your guides may be, do some ancestry, because usually somebody in that line will come to you and kind of say, hey, you're connected to this person, so this would probably be your guide or whatnot. I've seen that happen before.
Do you find that your guides change over time? Like either some go away, some come in, or you have the same set?
No, I have the same set. I might add some, I maybe add one. I can't say that they don't come and go. I've seen some different ones, but for certain reasons. I don't think that it was necessarily that they were there to help me, but it was something that was part of me. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, I have the same ones.
Do you find that when you are helping spirits cross, are you having your spirit guides help you with that? How does that work for you in particular?
I have to, it's a small meditation where I close my eyes. It takes about 10 seconds. I just close my eyes and I envision the beam of light form. Then I keep it there for a certain amount of time and give that spirit an opportunity to go into it. And I give them the choice. You can go into that or you don't have to, but if you want to get away from this situation, or if you want to move on, you can. And I always instruct spirits too. And I tell the living, you know, if you pass and you don't know where to go, if you feel trapped or you're scared or whatever, this and that, find a church. Majority, 90% of church will automatically have that light on all the time. And it's usually on the altar. Have you ever seen that movie, The Frighteners, with Michael J. Fox?
Yeah, it's
and a when great he's one. Looking, when he's, I love that movie. When he's looking into that church and he sees that light, that is not a false thing. That's an actual true thing, where spirits that, as long as the church is grounded in faith and grounded in, and it's been, you know, blessed and, you know, and it's not, the intentions was that it was supposed to be what it's supposed to be. Yeah, there's always going to be a light there. I've had to help a spirit move on from a distance. And the lady said after that, she knew that her husband wasn't there anymore.
That's really cool.
Have you ever encountered a location or a situation where you're going to help someone where your spirit guide team or your own intuition tells you, this isn't the space for me?
Yes. I help when I'm prompted to help, you know what I mean? Or I'm guided to help, you know? There's been times where I'll be driving by, I can drive by a building and tell you if it's haunted or not. I can look on TV and see if, you know what I mean? It's a natural thing. But if there's some place that somebody says, oh, you need to go here, and I'll give you a story on that. Somebody, a friend of mine, my camera guy that I work with, called me one day and he said, there's this lady that's calling me that's got this farmhouse and, she's says it's haunted and she's just moving in and this and that. She doesn't know what she's going to do with the property, this and that, da, da, da. And I'm like, okay. And so I kind of, remote viewing is, I also do that. So I was kind of remote viewing it. And then I saw this lady walk out of her house. And then I saw this big monstrosity of what looked like a demon. I don't know what it was, but it was attached to her. And I told my buddy, Josh, I said, absolutely not. I'm like, no. Actually, I got to back up because he called me and he says, I'm getting ready to get in the car, you know, and I'll, you know, are you getting in your car? And I'm like, yeah, I'll get my car. And something told me to wait to view, remote view that place. And then I did. And that's when I saw what I saw. And I called him back and I said, I don't think about that. I don't think this is a good idea. He's like, you know what? And it's kind of weird because I'm feeling the same way you are. Come to find out later on in the last year, his gifts, he didn't realize he was gifted, but he really was. And he actually has become quite gifted. So he was feeling a little bit what I was feeling. Now, that lady, we told that lady, nope, sorry, we can't do it. We're too busy, whatever excuse we gave that person. And then she would still contact my buddy Josh. And she's like, nope. He's like, nope, I can't. You know, I can't. I don't have time for that. Da, da, da. And I said, that place has got some bad juju around the property, around the building, around her. I was like, okay. 6 months ago, that place burnt down. And I'm like, yeah, okay. There was a reason for that. So yeah, to answer your question, yeah, there's certain places that spirit says, absolutely not, you know? So yeah, my intuitions are usually pretty good about that.
Yeah, I enjoy going to all of these different places to try to connect with spirits. And what I like to do is I've been bringing my violin and just play music. And for me, it's just been kind of a good way of connecting without just asking questions, right? It's kind of like my way of being like, hello. This is my way of saying hello and bringing some good vibrations in. And also music is kind of a language of its own, right?
It's a good conduit, especially a violin.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a great conduit. Yep. It's a soothing. Because the frequency of the violin is just just soothing. You know what I mean? Kind of like piano is another thing, but the violin is so, what's the word I'm looking for? Elegant in that sense.
Yeah.
Especially going to an old building, especially if you ever go to Gettysburg. Take your violin with you. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's exciting.
That,
yeah.
That time frame, because of the fact that back in the day, when a lot of the people that were in the Civil War, a lot of those men would play the violin to soothe some of the soldiers, because of the fact that they were shell-shocked, or they were, you know, in gunfights and they were shot themselves or whatever. That type of music with violin, especially down south, is common for joy and soothing and whatnot. And I just listened to a video of a girl 12 years old do a violin set with the piano player. And what I realized that was, it was so soothing that it made me feel good. You know what I mean? Mm. So that's something that, if you're very good at the violin, then by all means, I would take it everywhere. If that was a way to communicate with spirits, by all means. I mean, that's awesome.
I think different instruments, depending on what you believe in, I think different instruments speak to different chakras or energetic yeah, mm-hmm. points within the body. So for me, I feel like it's interesting your connection with the violin, BJ, because I feel like the violin really has a strong connection to like the heart chakra and mm-hmm. like the empathy gifts. Right. So it's funny that's your instrument of choice.
You see, him being gifted, just like I'm being gifted, he has a gift that I do not. You know what I mean? Doesn't always happen that way, but music has always been something that, where I play guitar, but I'm not very good, but I've created music that is soothing. But, you know, so I have a love for, passion for music, you know what I mean? Especially that one's music that can move you. Mm-hmm. And there's different frequencies that with music, especially like piano or violin or whatever, it's just, it does something, like you said, to the chakras. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I think that having music involved in some type of paranormal, that's a great idea, actually. I mean, that's something to look into.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing it for a while. I did it in Scotland. I brought it, played it in a cemetery late at night, and just, that's the thing. It's just, it's been fun. It's been one of those things that that I'm trying to make like my own, because I'm not very good. It's kind of like a way to practice and then hopefully you know, they'll like it, and even if they don't, they can let me know, right?
Right. No, but I highly doubt that they would tell you to stop playing unless you were totally terrible but and making it screech, but I don't see that. But no, I think that is something that you should do a video on. That seriously, you should have somebody record you while you're doing that, while you're running voice recorders.
I am going to the Abbey Monastery in Canyon City, Colorado, here this Saturday, and I'm going to bring my violin, and we'll definitely do that. And that building's great.
It's got a great acoustics.
Oh yeah, I played in their chapel, and we've gotten a few things the last time I went there through the spirit box, and so hopefully we can get it again and bring them some joy, you know, like, why not?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I would love to see that video. That'd be awesome.
Hit record, BJ.
I will send it to you. Yeah, we'll cover all the bases for that.
Nice.
And it is starting to be the holiday season, so I think you play like Silent Night or something on your violin, don't you?
Yeah,
I can. It's very on theme.
Right.
Now, I know we're starting to get to the top of the hour here. So are there any questions or final thoughts we want to share before we wrap this amazing episode up?
No, I think that, I mean, we kind of talked quite a bit about a lot of different things. And yeah, once I get on a roll, I don't kind of shut up. So
no, I love it. I love the stories you've been sharing. This has been great. I'm really curious to go and dive into your other podcasts. I love that you're exploring near-death experiences. With that said, what's drawing you to have an entire podcast focusing on that?
Just to be able to give people a voice, a release. It's basically kind of like therapy, you know, for them to release that angst if they have it, or, you know, kind of just be able to tell their story. People want to be able to tell their stories. And when you unload a story like that, or even if it's just a normal story. You know, people, the power of the spoken word is just incredible, especially for like therapy purposes. People who have that near-death experience, they want to tell people, but they're afraid to tell people because of the fact that not a lot of people, they feel that won't believe them. You know what I mean? So I wanted to give them a platform that they could feel at ease and be able to tell their story without somebody hovering over them, asking them constant questions. I just wanted them to, you know, I'd introduce them, have them on the show. I would disappear. I would record you, and then you could just tell your story.
Hearing multiple stories, are there any common threads that have jumped out at you or anything, any moments of, aha, this clicked into place for you?
No, it's actually because I've only got two episodes. So I kind of dropped that when I started something else. But I'm open to listen to a lot of different stories. You know what I mean? I kind of wanted to get a collection to get people to have a different view on NDEs and, you know, what they entail. And everybody's story is different. They can have similar aspects, but something different.
It's a great dialogue to have, and I love that you're normalizing or trying to normalize the conversation for them, but also for other people who haven't experienced it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They get an understanding of what it is instead of being afraid of it.
Yeah.
You know, people, there's a lot of people that are afraid of the paranormal. A lot of people are afraid of the near-death experiences and whatnot, you know? So it's kind of like, I just want to try to rest assured to, you know, bring that to people and say, you don't have to be scared, you know, unless you're totally a jackass and you're, you know, provoking and, you know, your intentions are garbage, then you're going to get what you get. You know what I mean?
And you don't throw a fit.
Right. Yeah. I'm just, you know, I've always told people that it's always been about, you know, being respectful and, you know, asking the questions that you want answers to, you know, and yeah, when you go into a location, don't ask them how they died or, you know, what year it was or whatever. Ask them what kind of car they drove.
No, I like that.
What did they eat for breakfast? You know, I mean, what was your family night like? You know, did you, you know, listen to the radio or did you take walk? I mean, it's getting into people's lives. That's why we do the cemetery files, because we want to be able to tell the stories of the dead. We want to tell the stories that people don't hear. People don't want to, you know, spirits who are in a building that they've been there forever are going to get the same questions. Ask them something new. And they'll be more apt to talk to you. If you treat them as if they're living and standing there, you're a guest in their house. And that's the way I've always looked at it.
My question to them will be, pineapple, does it belong on pizza?
That's a great question, you know. And I'm sure that you would probably get a hell no, but you know, you
know. Probably. That's funny.
BJ, John Thomas, do you guys have any final questions?
I have so many questions, but I don't think we have time for them. But yeah, I mean, I'm just so interested in a lot of the things that you mentioned. Like there's things that I want to get into, like talking about people who have crossed over that come back to talk to you versus just spirits who haven't crossed over in the way that they can interact with us and can't interact with us and what their roles are and how different they are after they've crossed over and come back. There's just so much there that I think a lot of people would be interested in. And I just, yeah, it's great. I think.
Well, you can always have me back on your show again.
Part two.
Yeah, I mean, I can, you know,
that'd
you
be
want
great.
Some answers to those questions, I can answer those questions.
Jay, if people want to find more about you or reach out to you to do any kind of, you know, spiritual work, where can they find more?
You can find me on Facebook. I have a Medium page called Jay Hill's Psychic Medium and Paranormal Investigator, and that's on Facebook. You can find me on jd.hill. on Facebook, Studio 6 Media Productions on Facebook, Cemetery Files on Facebook. I mean, I just...
All the projects would start with JD.
Right. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on TikTok under J Paranormal or Studio 6 Media Productions as well. You could find Studio 6 Media Productions wherever you get your podcasts. We'll have all of my podcasts on there, including the Paranormal Triangle, which are hilarious. My paranormal memoirs are on there. I'm going to make a new one probably tomorrow for paranormal memoirs. I'm going to talk about my trip to Tombstone.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have a campaign on Indiegogo for Pioneer and Pioneer Bloodshed, Spirits of the Wild West. I'm raising money because this is what I want to do. It's expensive, and travel is expensive, and everything's expensive. So I've got a three-part series to start, and I paid for the first part myself, and it pretty much broke my bank. So that's why I started the Indiegogo, because I can't do it with what I make. But I could send you that link, and you could share it out wherever you want to share it out.
Yes, please. We absolutely will.
Yeah. I'm also on YouTube, Studio 6 Media Productions. I have some videos on there, and I have my campaign intro on there as well. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been an amazing episode. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this time with us. We'd absolutely love to continue the conversation in a second mm-hmm. episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise. All right, John Thomas, you want to bring us home?
I sure do. Thank you, Jay, for coming on. And we definitely look forward to having you back, like Ashley said. Mm-hmm. Be on the lookout for that, people. and thank you to all of our listeners for listening to this episode of 300 Podcast. With your host, I'm John Thomas.
I am Ashley Lunar Goddess.
And I'm BJ Segura.
If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please feel free to email us at 300podcast@gmail.com. And if you haven't done so already, please like and follow all of our social media. You don't want to miss amazing guests like Mr. J here.
Also, don't forget to check out 300podcast.com, where you'll find all of our past and current season episodes, as well as guest information and all kinds of awesome merch.
Until next time.